Welcome to Family History, Genealogy Made Easy. I'm your host, Lisa Louise Cook. You probably have a lot of curiosity about your family history, but not a lot of time. And that's why I created this podcast. In each episode, I'm going to give you the tools that you need to uncover your family tree in quick and easy ways. In our last episode, we covered civil birth records. And as promised, in this week's episode, we finish up this two-part series with church birth records. And just like with civil birth records, there are a variety of records to track down. So to help us out in the hunt, I'm bringing back in professional genealogist Arlene Eagle, who will help us to see the challenges we face and the success we can have locating church birth records.
Well, the very first place to check is the International Genealogical Index that's compiled by the LDS Church, because they have been responsible for extracting through their regular record extraction program, their controlled program. They've been extracting the information from church books in many foreign countries, as well as the British Isles and the United States. Just one little fact may enable you to get the right answer where everybody else has gone from a printed source or from some other abstract which was incomplete and drawn the wrong conclusion.
In this episode, Arlene's going to give us specific and targeted information about which church birth records are available and how to find them. So, get ready for another intensive half hour of training from the best in the biz, Arlene H. Eagle, PhD. Arlene Eagle is the president and founder of the Genealogical Institute, Inc., and a professional genealogist since 1962. She holds both an MA and a PhD in English history and an associate degree in nursing. A prolific writer with more than 90 titles to her credit, she was general co-editor of the award-winning The Source, Guidebook for American Genealogy. She also co-authored the national bestseller, Family History for Fun and Profit, The Genealogy Research Process, and Genealogy in Land Records, and Ancestry's Guide to Research. This is one smart gal, and in this first segment of our interview, done over Skype, Arlene digs right into an overview of church birth records.
Well, Arlene, we've talked about civil records here on the show, the ones that are recorded through the government. But then there is a wealth of church records available. And as you mentioned, when we last talked, they can go much farther back. So take our hand and pull us into the arena of church records. What are we looking for and what's available?
Well, the very first place to check is the International Genealogical Index that's compiled by the LDS Church, because they have been responsible for extracting through their regular record extraction program, their controlled program, they've been extracting the information from church books in many foreign countries, as well as the British Isles and the United States. And so that's the very first place. If you're interested in finding the entry from the church record, you put in the name of the person and the date that you or an about date. And I always like to include on their search screen, it gives you the option that you can search for a period of 5 years or 10 years or as many as 20 years at a time. Mm-hmm. And so you can put in the name of the person you're looking for, and then, you know, if they have already extracted, it will come up and it will give you the source information from which the entry is put into this index. But it includes, well, I think the version that is frozen on the internet at the present time has more than 700 million entries.
And then that's so the IGI.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And that is
the largest
single database of church records with birth, and the birth is the primary entry.
Wow, just immense amount of records.
And so, you know, your chances of finding someone are very good. And a second thing that often happens, you may have an ancestor who is a namesake for someone else. And when you put the name in, if you search 20 years on either side, you will frequently pick up the namesake as well.
That's a great tip.
It will often give you a clue as to where you are to search next. And so if you find that someone has a really unusual name like William Swinfield Hatch, then if you find another William Swinfield Hatch in the database within the years, then you need to look at that person as well.
That's a great tip.
You know, you might find lots of George Washington logos.
Exactly.
You know, or Andrew Jackson somebody, or Franklin Delano Roosevelt somebody. And those are going to be less important.
Yeah.
But where you have a person who is, you know, just has a regular, seemingly regular name, and you find the exact same name within the time period you're looking at, it's very important to look at both, because they can indeed be related.
So the IGI that we're searching from the FamilySearch.org website, all of these just millions of records that you're talking about are transcribed right off of the church registers. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and they were transcribed by people who were trained to read the records and trained to do it. And those that went through that extraction program have a high degree of accuracy from the original. Every once in a while, you'll find something that really looks funny. And then you know that, you know, but it will give you the source information so that you can actually check it out. And it's always a good idea to do that, because frequently the source will give you additional information.
That's what I was going to ask you was, can we just rely on what we're getting through the IGI, or is it always critical, and I'm assuming it probably is, to try to get a hold of a copy of that original source?
Always.
Yeah.
Always. To whatever degree you can do it, it's important to get a copy of the original. Because, as I said, it can give you additional information. And just one little fact may enable you to get the right answer, where everybody else has gone from a printed source or from some other abstract which was incomplete and drawn the wrong conclusion.
Uh-huh.
And so it's always very important, in my opinion, to get a copy of the original.
Well, and you made that point as well when we were talking about the civil records, that, you know, you can locate the civil record, but it's always, always a wonderful thing to go and get backup sources. Everything from checking a cemetery record to looking it up in the newspaper, just seeing how things line up. Even though we look at a register on a church register, the birth record as a primary source, even if you're looking into secondary sources, it's really nice to see if there's anything that stands out that just doesn't quite jive, so you can kind of check into it further.
Because and especially with specific kinds of ethnic backgrounds, they're going to have very small name pools, and so you'll find lots and lots of people with the same name.
Exactly.
And you want to be very sure that you've got the right one. Now, there's one birth record that we haven't talked about that is extremely important, and that is the Social Security Death Index.
Uh-huh.
It's probably, next to the IGI, it is probably the second best place to quickly retrieve a birth record, a birth date. And with the birth date, then you can do lots of different things. But it's the birth date that is so very, very important. And some of them will go back as early as 1850 or before.
Because of the age they were at the time that they registered for Social Security.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so you can get them, you know, and so it's always important to check the Social Security Death Index, always. If your person died after 1937, you should always check that, because it will give you some very, very important information. But
you bet.
Primarily that birth date.
Now, we talked about the Social Security Death Index on our earlier episode, and I'll have a link for that in the show notes for this episode if you want more information on it. But, Arlene, I'm assuming for a birth record, that is not considered a primary source then. That would be a secondary source. Would it not?
Well, I wouldn't call it a secondary source. It's still a primary source in that the person who is that you're interested in is the one who gave the birth information.
Right.
They are giving their own birth information. And so it has the chance to be every bit as accurate, in fact, more accurate than the person who is relying upon the doctor to record the fact or the father to submit the information.
Mm.
And some fathers of different periods of time, the father may actually submit information on three or four children at the same time. And so what you have to realize is you're actually talking to the person himself. He's the one who filled out the Social Security information and gave his birth date. He's not
right.
The one who supplied the death record.
Right.
Someone else supplied that. But he supplied his own birth date. It's what he thought his birth record was, or
okay.
He wanted other people to have as his. And so it is a primary record for the birth.
Yeah, because I was wondering, because although, of course, that person is present at their birth, they aren't necessarily in a position to record it at that time. So they are relying on the information told to them. But if anybody knows it accurately, it's probably that person. So that's wonderful to know that we can look at it in that fashion. And we can still look for other sources to back it up. But it sure is a quick and easy way because it's free online, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
A number and variety of places. So it's very, very important. I don't know if in your previous interview, when you were talking about the Social Security Death Index,
uh-huh.
One of the things that I always was puzzled by was I would look for people who should have been in there before 1965, but I never could find one. In fact, I might look at whole surname groupings and never find one that is dated before 1965. I discovered that they didn't put those all in, and they still aren't all in there yet. As they have time from entering the current death information, they are adding the pre-1965 names.
Ah.
And so in every update of that database, there will be additional entries that were not there before from the time period 1937 to 1965.
So not to be discouraged.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, I assumed that when they put the information in, that they had people who were working in that earlier time period too. But they didn't do that. They started with the current date. And then they went backwards and forwards, and they started with, they put in all of the 1965 plus, because those are the people who are still living.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And they would be the ones who would need that information for legal purposes. With the people who were born or who had died prior to 1965, the majority of them were no longer living. And so it was an economic choice based on some very logical reasons. But genealogically, we need to know that not everybody is in there yet from that early time period.
That's a really great tip. It just reminds us over and over that the Internet is an evolving moment by moment. It's different than it was. So
absolutely.
We can never look at it as a stagnant resource, but this constantly evolving resource that what isn't there today may be there tomorrow.
Absolutely. And we need to check it. It needs to be checked on a regular and consistent basis, as does any database that is in the state of flux. And with new Family Search, once it's universally available to everyone,
yes.
Then you want to be sure that you check that, because it will change probably minute by minute.
Absolutely.
Once again, a ton of great information. Well, we're going to go even further into church birth records right after we take a time out to hear from our sponsors. These are terrific products, and when you support our sponsors, you make it possible for me to keep bringing this free show to you every week. I'm Lisa Louise Cook, and you're listening to Family History, Genealogy Made Easy. We're back, and I'm your host, Lisa Louise Cook. Now let's head back to my conversation with Arlene Eagle and her tips on how to track down church birth records.
Arlene, let's then talk about if for some reason we don't find the birth record, the church record that we're looking for in the family history library, it may be because this person lived more recently. I know in the case of my great-grandparents, their birth records were not in the family history library records, but I actually contacted the church in the little town in Illinois, and they were able to make copies for me. Talk to us a little bit about what we do in the last 100 years or so, and about contacting churches themselves.
If you have the name of the locality, the quickest thing, in my opinion, is to go onto the internet and to go into either Roots Web or U.S. Gen Web, and go to the county where your people lived, and then check to see if there isn't already a current list of churches that apply to that area, because many genealogists have already done the legwork, and they know that there was a church that was at this crossroads.
Yes.
And your family lived in that area, and now you've got the name of the church. You may even have the address of the church if it's still a current church. And you have information about the records of the church. Have the records been published? Are the records available at the church? Have the records been transferred? It may be that a genealogist has already done that legwork for you, and you don't have to do it all yourself.
Oh, wonderful.
And so that's what I do. I go on to either Roots Web or U.S. Gen Web for the county where that family lived. And I look for the churches. I look for the cemeteries. I look for the marriage records. Frequently they've already put some of the vital records onto that site, or they are in the process of doing it. And there may be additional sources which they have put on there, like biographical sketches, which often give birth information, and so forth, that may help you, you know, immediately. People start on the internet anyway.
Yeah.
You can put it to really good use.
I love that you brought that up, because you can really get tunnel vision when you're working, can't you? And you just start thinking about where these things are, and you forget that there's millions of other people out there also doing research, and they may have already done some of that legwork for you. That's a
Absolutely.
Wonderful point.
Well, and it's especially true, I think, if you find that you're the only one in your family that seems to have any interest.
Yeah.
But you forget about the fact that there were siblings to your ancestor who also probably left descendants, and they're floating all around everywhere. They could be anywhere in the world. I had a contact from a woman who is from the U.S., but she's currently living in China. And so she does everything that she does at the moment is online, because
wow.
that's her only access to information.
Yeah.
And so she wants to know, what can I do online to be able to trace my family? So she doesn't know anybody else in her family that's working. This is, you know, she's starting out and needs to start from scratch. But she's going to discover that there are lots of other people in other parts of the world who also have an interest in her ancestor.
And may have already done, as you say, some of the work. You know, and you mentioned Roots Web, and you mentioned U.S. Gen Web, which is just about one of my favorite sites. And when you go to that county level, we have to remember that each county website is hosted by a volunteer. They're all going to look different. So we're looking for a variety of types of everything from digitized records, but more likely indexes, to even the name of a person who might be just willing to go because they live down the road, and they'll be willing to go and do it for you. And that brings up the Random Acts of Kindness website. There again, if you can't find it online, there may be somebody who lives just down the road who could go and be willing to check in at the church itself.
That's absolutely right. There's an awful lot of volunteerism in genealogy.
Yeah.
And thank goodness there is, because,
yes.
You know, there's a lot of information that has been compiled. Now, another retrievable one is books.google.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can put the name of your ancestor in the Google search box, and you can come up with all kinds of information because they've already put that online. So published volumes that were published many years ago and are considered rare books that sometimes your local library will never have heard of. You may not have heard or even thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden here turns up the entry for the very ancestor that you're looking for. This approach is not as successful if you're looking for John Smith.
Yeah.
You see, without a considerable number of qualifiers. But if you have someone who has even a modestly different given name,
mm-hmm.
then it makes it possible, like you have Mordecai, or you might have Claiborne, or you might have Sheffield, or Sherwood, or any number of different given names with a common surname. And now you're off and running.
Exactly. And these volumes that you're talking about, these are perhaps somebody at some point who sat down and compiled all the data out of the church registers for a particular church and published them in book form. That's what you're talking about?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I'm also talking about both serialized and just individual volumes of genealogy information that was published in every different place. There are literally hundreds of thousands of these books.
Right.
And Google has as their mission to put every printed book from the beginning of printing to the modern day online.
Wouldn't that be fantastic?
That is a very huge, huge mission. And so, you know, they're just getting started. But if you have British Isles research, there are many, many series of volumes that are only available in one or two libraries in this country and in just a few libraries in the British Isles.
Mm-hmm.
And they will come up on your screen for free on Google.
Gosh, you remember when they first started talking about digitizing the census? And when we thought about the pages and pages on the rolls and rolls of microfilm that we had looked at ourselves, it almost just seemed impossible, and yet they accomplished it. So when you talk about what Google's doing, there again, I just wouldn't be surprised. And it's amazing how quickly they can do it these days.
Oh, yeah. And they've got it done, and they've been through, for example, they've been through the Wisconsin State Historical Society, which is one of the incredible collections. And all the books have been microfilmed, digitized.
Wow.
You can access them through Google. And you have absolutely no idea what they collected. They collected, because the man who was actually in charge of the collection in the 1840s and 50s was Lyman Draper. And it was his desire to do a history of the United States from the Appalachian Mountains west to the Mississippi River. And so that included all of the areas. That included all the South. It included all those middle states. And it included all of the Northwest.
That's amazing.
And so he has all this Virginia information that he collected in book form, books that were published in early 1800s all the way up to the year 1900. Many, many, many books are in that collection. And, you know, there just aren't all that many easily retrievable copies. But especially not for us out in the West.
Yeah, exactly. Oh,
you're not near those Eastern libraries. You have to go there in order to use them. And if you go, for example, to the Connecticut historical library, a state library, or to the Connecticut Historical Society. They have a limit. You cannot make a photocopy out of any book published before 1950.
Right.
So even if you find the information that you want, you can't make a copy. You have to handwrite it.
Mm. Or perhaps even take a digital photograph these days if they allow you to bring this. You know, everyone is different.
Won't allow you to,
exactly.
No, they won't allow you to do that because the light, it's the light and the physical flattening of the book in order to take a picture.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the project that Google is doing is extremely valuable to us because it makes it available to us, number one, for free.
Uh-huh.
But number two, most of them are very good scans. So they're very legible. And in most instances, you can make a photocopy at least of one page. You may not be able to photocopy the whole item, but you can get at least the page that you need to show the proof of your ancestry.
Exactly. Oh, all great tips, amazing resources, and they're adding them every day. And you were definitely the person to talk to about these because I know that you are in there, as you said, getting to the library 3 or 4 times a week, and you are just hands-on with the genealogy of many, many people, aren't you?
Yes, I do work for a lot of clients.
You can find Arlene on the web at arleneeagle.com. And you can also hear her in person at the Southern California Genealogy Jamboree, being held in Burbank, California, from June 26th to June 28th, 2009. I'm going to be there as well, and we would both love to see you. So to find out more information about attending the Jamboree, visit the blog at genealogyjamboree.blogspot.com. And later in the year, you'll also find both Arlene and I at the various family history expos throughout the Western United States. So for more information on family history expos, visit familyhistoryexpos.com. Are you looking for a way to get even more genealogy gems that will power boost your research, inspire your creativity, and give you the motivation that you need to tackle that brick wall? Will become a Genealogy Gems premium member. You'll get 2 extra members-only episodes every month, packed with great information that you can use right away, an instructional video series walking you through the best internet tools step-by-step. Our current series is called Google, a Goldmine of Genealogy Gems, and in each episode, you can follow along with me as I show you online how to get the most out of Google. If you enjoy the Genealogy Gems podcast, then you're going to love being a premium member. But don't just take my word for it. Here's what your fellow podcast listeners have to say.
This is Melissa Barker in Tennessee. I'm just calling to let you know how much I'm enjoying your Genealogy Podcast Premium Edition. I especially love the handwriting analysis with Paula Sassy. And all the tips and information that you give is just so wonderful. I would encourage anyone to become a member of your Genealogy Gems Podcast Premium.
To become a premium member and start reaping the benefits right away, go to genealogygems.tv and click the Join Today button. And by entering the special coupon code SAVE20, that's SAVE20, you will get 20% off the annual membership. Genealogy Gems Premium Membership. It's where you belong. That brings us to the end of the show. Did you like what you heard? Did you learn a few new things? I know I sure did. Well, if you find this free podcast helpful, then be sure and spread the word. Podcasts are still pretty new to many people, and your friends and genealogy society may just need someone like you to introduce them to the wonderful world of free podcasts. So I hope that you'll help me get the word out by sharing the website address, which is genealogygems.tv, with folks that you know. Let them know that they'll not only find this show, but also, of course, the Genealogy Gems podcast, along with fun and informative videos and lots of research resources. And be sure and let them know that they can also get a free copy of my ebook, which is called 5 Fabulous Google Strategies for the Family Historian, just for signing up for the free e-newsletter. And then the newsletter will give them all the information that they need to get the most out of the podcast. And they can sign up for that right from the box on the homepage at genealogygems.tv. You know, you guys have really been fantastic about leaving 5-star ratings and written reviews in iTunes for the show, and that has really helped new listeners to find us and to give us a try. So in my book, you guys are the real gems, and I want to thank you so much for your support of both the shows. And I want to support you too, and that's why I put together the written show notes for each episode and provide a list of links to all the websites that we talk about. So to find the show notes for this episode, just visit my website, go to genealogygems.tv, click on the Family History Genealogy Made Easy box, the bright yellow family that you'll see there on the front page, and that will take you to the web pages for this show. Just scroll down and click on episode number 25, and you'll find the show notes there, the list of links, and also biography information about the guests that we have here on the show. And finally, I want to encourage you to drop me an email anytime you have a question or a comment, or you just want to share your family history research challenges and successes with me. So you can email me at genealogymadeeasy@gmail.com. Here's a final thought for today. Daniel Webster once said, "He who knoweth not from whence he came careth little whither he goeth." Thanks so much for listening, friend. I'm Lisa Louise Cook, and I'll talk to you next week.